The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
Shavuot Tov, thank you for coming. A fellow by the name of Jerry Kleinberg turned 65, and he, of course, went for a checkup. So he went to his doctor, and he asked his doctor, "Doctor, what are my chances of living till 100 years old?" So the doctor said, "Well, tell me, do you indulge in desserts like fatty, sugary foods?" He says, "Oh, no, I stay away from it." He said, "What about sirloin steaks and that kind of..." He says, "Oh, no, God forbid, wouldn't do that." He said, "And what about, like, you know, your sex life? What are you, you know..." "Oh, no, no, I'm very prudent about that too." So the doctor turned to him and says, "Mr. Kleinberg, why would you want to live to 100? Right? People often confuse pleasure with happiness, which is completely different. And what I want to try and explore is, what is happiness? How does Judaism teach us to be happy? Are there other Jewish strategies from Torah on how to really live a happy life? Okay? So the first step to being happy is to being you. The more you can be who you are, the more you can be the happy you want to be. So a number of years ago, a woman was having dinner at my home for Friday night. She was talking about her family, and she happened to mention that her mother is in Japan. So I said, "Oh, what's your mother doing in Japan?" She said, "Well, she's looking for herself." All right, that's not uncommon. People go places. I came to Israel when I was 18 looking for myself. But my children, who understand English, but not so well, they heard this, and they could not figure out what she just said about her mother. My daughter, who must have been maybe 9 years old, she turns to me, and she says, "Abba, Mahimra, what did she say?" So now I have to take this very familiar phrase and translate it into Hebrew. So I said, "Well, Ima Shila, her mother, he be Japan, she's in Japan, vihi mechapeset et etzma, and she's looking for herself." You have to understand, my daughter was in utter shock, because that's what she thought this woman said, and suddenly her eyes grow wide, and she goes like this. And suddenly I realize how frightening it must be in the mind of a child. Like, you could lose yourself? Like, and then you have to go looking for yourself? Like, what was she? She was in a hotel, and she checked out, and then realized she forgot herself in the room? So then she ran to the receptionist, "Excuse me, I think I forgot myself in the room." "Oh, we're sorry, ma'am, but we cleaned out the room." "Oh, you cleaned by myself, was in the room. But there is a lost and found, but, oh, that's closed. Tomorrow morning, you can come." I mean, what does it mean to look for yourself? Who is, what is the real self? But in a strange way, we talk about self as if it's an object, and yet how can we be both the subject and the object of the very same sentence? Okay? So how can I say, "I am looking for myself"? Doesn't make sense. But we speak this all the time. We talk about, "I like myself." Well, again, who likes who? Or, "I hate myself." Again, who hates who? Or, "I'm going to treat myself." Well, who will pay for the dinner? Or, "I am going to hurt myself." Well, then who's going to feel the pain that you're inflicting? But for some reason, we talk this way and we think it makes sense. But it even gets more crazy, because people even try to kill themselves. And again, who is going to kill who? Now, I remember I was in this department, it was a supermarket on the west side of Manhattan. And there was a fellow there who was probably drunk or maybe high, and he starts screaming, "I will kill myself! I will kill myself!" The sad thing is nobody paid attention to him, or nobody showed that they paid attention to him. You could not not pay attention to him. But everybody ignored him, because I think they were afraid he'd kill them. And so a policeman comes in to quiet the guy down. He says, "Shh, man, quiet, quiet." And the guy's screaming, "I'm going to kill myself, I'm going to kill myself." So the policeman says to him, now, why are you going to kill yourself? And everyone's listening to this discussion. So the guy says, why? He's like a little surprised at that question. He says, well, because my father hates me and my mama hates me. And quite frankly, I hate me. So I'm going to kill myself. Okay? So the policeman says, but listen to what you're saying. If you kill yourself, you're going to be dead. The guy says, yeah. And if you're dead, how will you know you're happy you're dead? So the guy says, wait a second. What? You mean if I kill myself, I'm going to be dead? And the policeman says, that's right. And if I'm dead, how will I know I'm happy? I'm dead. And the policeman says, that's right. At that point he said, oh man, I can't even be happy. I can't even kill myself and be happy. Right? Now who did he think was going to survive his suicide? And yet in a strange way, what this fellow intuited was not so wrong. Wrong that he'd be happy, but that there would be a self that would survive his death. Okay? So what I want to try and understand is what I call me, myself, and I. Me, myself, and I. Okay? And of course, the goal of this is eye contact. Okay? Me, myself, and I. Have you ever thought of, when you were a child, did you ever wonder who would I have been if my mother would have married another man? Could you imagine that question of a child? It sounds like a ridiculous question because I would not be me. No, I would not be me, but I would be. I just would not be me. In other words, I remember as a child thinking about this and thinking, I wonder who I'd be if my mother would have married another man. I thought about that lots of times because being a redhead, you get picked on all the time, right? So, when you get older, it's cool. You actually enjoy, having red hair, and then when you start getting white hair and then you turn pink, it's not so cool, right? But when you're a kid, red is not so great. People call you, big red. People call you meathead. People call you carrot top. And of course, my only response to that is, the tops of carrots are green. And that was like the best I could say about that one. So there are times where I would think, like, I wonder who I would have been if my mother would have married another man. That maybe I would have been taller. Maybe I would have been darker hair. But it's an incredible idea because what that child is intuiting is a self that transcends the particular me. In other words, what is the me? The me is your character. Okay? That is me. Okay? Everything you say about yourself is not about yourself at all. It's really about your character that you play in the world. That's a very important distinction between the self and the character. The self, however, is really the soul. Okay? You are a soul. Okay? Even though we talk about myself, it's a little ridiculous because you don't have a self. You are a self. But we say myself, right, to distinguish it from yourself. But the truth is, you don't have a self and you don't have a soul. You are a soul, okay? We talk about my body, my soul. It's not correct. You have a body, but you don't have a soul. You are a soul. At this moment, soul is talking to soul, okay? And character is very different than soul. And in order to truly be happy in your life, the first thing you need to do is understand the difference between self and character. Okay, let's try to understand this. The soul comes into this world and is given a part, very much like an actor is given a part. Okay, the actor is not the character. Okay, the actor plays a character. All right, and your character is quite defined. From the standpoint of fate, there is something to be said for astrology. Now, Judaism does discourage us to turn to astrology for advice, but it does talk about astrology. The Talmud does talk about astrology. For instance, the Talmud says that if a person was born at the time of Mars, right, they will have a bloodthirsty character. That's just their character. And you won't be able to change that. If you try to change it, you're wasting your time. But what could you do with a bloodthirsty character? Well, there's lots of things you could do. You could become a serial killer. Okay, go around killing Captain Crunch and all kinds of cereals. No, you could become a serial killer. You could kill lots of people. That's blood, that's fun, and you would be feeling really quite good about yourself because you're doing something that really is in line with your character. But there's something else you could do. You could become a ritual slaughterer. You could slaughter ritual, okay? You could be a ritual slaughterer. You could kill animals, and that would get out your bloodthirsty character. Or you could be a moil, right? You could, well, not if you're a woman, this might be a little difficult, but you certainly could go into circumcision as a business. Or you could be a surgeon. Surgeons have a great time, you know, cutting people into pieces and, you know, and seeing things splitting all over the place. And they get their thrills. You know, I would never go into that kind of business. I don't have a bloodthirsty character, right? I prefer Coca-Cola, but not blood, okay? But you know, but that's your character. Okay? You are born with a certain character, but you are a soul that comes in this world and you're given certain characteristics that you have been given to work with. Okay? And there's nothing wrong with your character. What's wrong is how you're using it. But there's nothing wrong with your character. Now, before my wife got involved in Judaism, she was very involved in astrology. She was later on told by a rabbi that she should move out of that, so she did. But at that time, she showed me that there's something called astrological twins. Okay? Astrological twins are two people born at the same time, in the same vicinity, and they have the exact same astrological map. Okay? Well, then what would that mean? Right? So she asked her astrology teacher, who was Jewish, and she said, she said, where's free choice? These two people have the exact same maps. Now you have to understand, she showed me in her astrological books pictures of astrological twins, and they look like identical twins. And there was no family connection whatsoever. It was really spooky. Okay? So she asked her teacher, then where is free choice? The teacher said, the free choice in soul. The soul comes into the world and is given a character to play. And you can do with it what you want. Okay? You were given a bloodthirsty character, and you could be a surgeon, you could be a ritual slaughterer, you could be a serial murderer. There's lots of things you could do with it. Okay? But you're not going to become a piano teacher. And if you do, you'll probably try and kill your piano. Because you are looking for blood. It's just not what you're into. Okay? I don't know. Maybe you could find a living piano. But that, you just have to know that that's your character. Now, some people don't know what their character is. And if you don't, so then you can go to character, you know, character testing. You could go to career counseling. You could go to a graphologist who could probably tell you a lot about your characteristics. Okay? But you have to understand, your character is your character. And your soul is you. You have character, but you are a soul. And what you do with your character is up to you what you want to do with it. Okay? Now, for instance, I was born, no question in my mind, with the ability to speak in public. It was something I did as soon as I was born. I started talking in public. No, just joking. I started babbling in public. But then when I finally was able to speak, it's something that I was just given. Okay? I'm told that the number one fear in the United States is public speaking. The number two fear in the United States is dying. So, in other words, if you be given the opportunity to give a eulogy, it means you'd rather be in that box, okay? That's Tourette Seinfeld, okay? So, but I am not, that is not my problem. I have no fear of public speaking, right? I actually, I'm more afraid of private speaking than public speaking. No problem, right? But that's not something I worked on. It's not something, it's not a given thing. As a child, I had a feeling of calling to stage. I did acting as a child. I used to get the lead roles in the synagogue plays that were in front of two or three people. No, they're about more than two or three people. But, you know, it's just who I am. Okay? But as a child, I thought maybe I'd go into acting. And then, because I have a musical side to me also, I thought I'd go into rock and roll. And then I find myself being a rabbi. Okay? Now, obviously, it all, you know, now it's rock and soul. But it's still in the same direction. Which is, if that's just your character, you're meant to be on stage, you're meant to be on stage. Okay? That's your character. You need to get in touch with what's your character. That I could have gone on stage. I could have gone into stand-up. I could have gone into, I don't know, I could have worked for I don't know what. But I could have done lots of stuff with my stage, you know, inclination. But the soul has to decide what to do. And what we're going to talk about today is how do you make that decision of what you're supposed to do with the characters that God gave you. But it's important to understand that you are not your character. You are a soul. But what happens to people, and what can be a source of great psychic pain, is when the soul gets lost in their character. And then they're a victor of their personality rather than the master of their personality. Okay? Now, I shared this idea with the actor Kirk Douglas, who I used to study, not acting with. We used to study Torah together. And I shared this idea with him. He got very excited about the idea. He said, "This is what they teach you in acting school." I said, "Right. This is Kabbalah, Kirk. This is not." He said, "No. You learn this in acting school. In acting school, they teach you never get lost in your character." Very often, people would come up to him and say, "You know, Kirk, you just got lost in Spartacus. You just became Mickey Marcus." And Kirk would say, "No, I didn't get lost in Mickey Marcus. I didn't get lost in Spartacus. You got lost in Spartacus. My job as an actor is to get you lost in the character, okay? But I have to be able to be in my character and transcend, be just a little outside of my character in order to watch the director, okay? And that's what we have to do also. It's interesting. What's unique about a human being that animals cannot do is we are able to be in our part and outside our part at the same time. And that's why we're able to take responsibility, and that's why we're able to make changes in our lives. How does a person make change in their life? Change only happens when you're able to get outside of your character, your persona, and look at yourself. We can all do this, right? I could ask you all to put yourself in the corner and look at yourself from over there or up there. You could, it's the strangest thing, but we can actually be outside of our shell, outside our part. Okay? I'm sure you've experienced, for instance, if you were ever feeling really down. So at one moment you could be crying your eyes out in misery, and yet somehow you're kind of outside watching yourself crying and say, "You know, I'm going to be okay. I've been here before. I know how to move through this." Well, then who's crying? But that's the weird thing about it. You could be in your crying, you could be in your tears, a total participant in your life experience, and yet also be the audience of your show. It's the weirdest thing. Okay? Or if you've ever experienced yourself losing your temper. You lose your temper and you actually hear yourself yelling and saying to yourself, "Oh, do I look stupid?" But you're still yelling. "Oh, I can't believe I'm doing this. Right? I'm going to regret this." But you somehow are able to be outside the moment of your anger while being angry. It's the weirdest thing. But animals cannot do this. Okay? I've talked to lots of animals. They tell me they can't do this. Right? The Kabbalah says animals can't do this because they don't have a soul. A soul is the power to transcend. A soul means that I can be in my role, in my part, okay, and yet outside of it at the same time. It's an amazing thing. Okay? The first step to really finding happiness and really finding mastery in your life and true self-worth is you have to be able to distinguish between yourself and your character. Okay? Especially if somebody critiques you, they're not critiquing you. They're critiquing your character. Okay? And you should have the ability to say, "Oh, well, let me look at that character," just like an actor would not take it personally if someone critiqued the character he's playing. He's just being told, "Play it differently." So he should be able to play it differently. But what happens is people get trapped, people get lost in their character, cannot take criticism objectively, because they're taking it too seriously. They think they are their character. But that's as silly as thinking, "I am my clothing." Your character is your psychological clothing. You wear your psychological clothing, but you are not your psychological clothing. So if somebody critiques you, then you need to be able to get outside of your character and say, oh, that's really interesting, that's very helpful, and I can change that, or I can direct that, okay? Because I'm not that. That's what I play. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, a great Rebbe, once explained that why did he become Mr. Universe 5 times? Because he said all the other bodybuilders were afraid of critique. And he said he was afraid of not getting critique. All the other bodybuilders rather live in their delusions that they're great, whereby he rather know what he's not good at, because if he knew what he wasn't good at, then he'd have the ability to change. Right? But if you can't get outside yourself and look at it objectively, you're not going to be able to make the changes that you have to make. Now, have to understand, as I mentioned before, there's certain changes that you're not going to become something other than yourself, but there's a lot of flexibility within your persona. Okay? But you're not going to be someone completely different. You're not suddenly going to be, you know, if you're a very emotional person, you're not going to suddenly be an incredibly intellectual person. You're just going to need to know how to redirect your emotions. Okay? How to redirect your emotions. But other than that, you know, they say a story about a fellow who went to a great master and he said, Master, what's the secret of life? So the master said, wood, wires, and nails. So the guy had no clue what he was saying. And then years later, he forgot about the whole idea. Then years later, he heard this fellow playing guitar. And it was so enchanting that he followed the music and he saw this fellow sitting in the moonlight playing his guitar. At that moment, he suddenly realized wood, wires, and nails. What's the secret of life? It's how you assemble it. Okay, wood, wires, and nails could create a weapon. Wood, wires, and nails could create an instrument. Okay, so Hashem gives you wood, wires, and nails. And there's nothing wrong with nails, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with anybody. Right? But what's wrong is how you're assembling the various parts that Hashem, God, gave each and every one of us to work with. You follow that? And then you, as a soul, come in this world to play this part. Okay? And that's really the goal of what we are trying to do. Now it's interesting because that drunken fellow who said he's going to kill himself, okay, he intuited eternity. Why did he intuit eternity? Because you're a soul. Right? And a soul is eternal. What about us is going to die. Only the persona is going to die, but not you, right? Say, I'm not David Aaron. I play David Aaron. That's a part that I've been given to play in this life, right? David Aaron will die, but I'm not going to die, right? Because I just play David Aaron. Dying is as silly as an actor taking his part so seriously that though the play asks for him to die, right, he literally dies, right? The director says, cut, let's do it again, and the guy, he can't get up because he's dead. Right? That's ridiculous, but that's what happens. The people don't understand that you will never die, okay? You will play death, but you'll never die. Now, what could happen in your death? Well, this is where you get the idea in Judaism called reincarnation. What's reincarnation? Reincarnation means that you come back as a different character. Okay? Kabbalah teaches that most of us have already been here. Right? Most of us have already been here. Okay? And so when a person dies, what that really means is they're going to drop their character. I will no longer be playing David Aaron, and I'll be playing Jack Steinman, right, in my next life. Okay? But that's really what reincarnation is. It's not David Aaron coming back. David Aaron doesn't have to come back. That was a part that I played for whatever reason, which we'll talk about later. But that's a part that I play. And when a person dies, they could come back as another part. I remember my neighbor, she rebuked her daughter. Our daughter was like 5 years old, and the daughter did not appreciate the rebuke of her mother. So she looked at her mother and she said, next time, when I'm your mother and you're my daughter, you're in big trouble. Okay? How does a little girl get such a thought in her mind? Or I remember I took my children to Yad Vashem for the first time. My older children, my son when he was 13, and we're walking down the street like 3 months later, my 13-year-old turns to me and reminds me that I told them at Yad Vashem a story about how my aunt, unfortunately, sadly, tragically, witnessed the murder of her child in front of her by the Nazis. And 3 months later, my son turns to me and says, "You know, Daddy, I'm that baby." I don't know what he's talking about because it's totally out of context. I said, "You're not a baby." He says, "No, I'm that baby." I said, "What baby? What are you talking about?" So you remember you shared about your aunt's baby who's murdered by the Nazis? I'm that baby. Like, why would a kid say such a thing, right? Right? I mean, there's other ways of getting attention. But maybe not. Maybe I'm that bad a parent. I don't know. You know, it's a new strategy. Okay? But the idea is the soul is eternal. The soul is the real you. Everything you describe about yourself is not about yourself at all. It's about your character. Because the soul is indescribable. The soul is the thinking, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, cognitive you. And you cannot describe the soul. Just as you cannot describe what seeing looks like. What does seeing look like? Doesn't look like anything, and yet the power to see, which enables you to see colors and shapes and texture, cannot be described with colors or shapes or texture. It's power, right? Can't be described, right? What does hearing sound like, right? Hearing doesn't sound like anything. What does smelling smell like? What does tasting taste like? All the powers of cognition is the soul. You are a soul. You come in this world, you're given a body, and you're also given a psychological body. Okay? A persona, a character. And that's also part of your body. Okay? But sometimes what happens is souls get confused and start to think that they are their persona. And that's when they become victims of their character rather than masters of their character. What does Hashem then do to help you? Right? He gives you an identity crisis. Right? An identity crisis means that no longer do you perceive yourself the way you thought you were. And that shocks you. I have a friend who was a star basketball player. He was a little taller than me. And he was in Europe. And he wasn't religious at the time. And went up for a shoot, and he fell down on his ankle. And it ripped his ligaments terribly. So they schlepped him off the court, and his coach rushed towards his star player. The guy's in excruciating pain. First thing he says is, "I'll be back on the court next season. I'll really work hard." And so coach said to him, "I'm sorry, you're not going to be, not next season, not the season after. I know this injury, and you're out of the game forever." So essentially, this guy died on the court. Because until now, his whole self-worth was being a basketball player. And now he's not going to be a basketball player. So what does he do? So now he could start taking drugs, he could become an alcoholic, there's lots of things he could do. Or what he could do is say, "Well, I guess I'm going to play another part, because I'm not, and I was never a basketball player. I was a soul, I am a soul, I was playing a basketball player, and now I've been giving a new part. I don't know what that part's going to be, but I have to go find myself a new part." Right? So that's what he did. He came to Israel, went to yeshiva, and now he's a rabbi who keeps throwing, you know, garbage into baskets, whatever. Right? But whatever, the guy is trying to find a way, right, for him to find a new self. But that's really what a identity crisis is all about. Right? That's what identity crisis is all about. That you are being shocked by Hashem to let go of thinking you are your persona rather than you are a soul. Now look at the story of all the patriarchs and the matriarchs in Judaism. They all went through crises in their lives. And all their challenges were specifically in their innate characteristics. Abraham, we all know, is the man of kindness. He was born with a kind disposition. Look at his life. His life is constantly asking him to be other than kind. Do you follow that? Okay? He has to leave his father. He's got to tell his nephew to go away. Right? And his life climaxes with him nearly sacrificing his son. Hardly what kind people like to do. What was Hashem doing? Hashem was forcing Abraham to act out of character, which is a very powerful soul moment in your life. You don't have to always do it. But if you can never do it, it means you became a slave to your persona rather than the master of your persona. Do you get it? How about Yitzchak? Yitzchak, we are told, is Gvura. When you look at Yitzchak in the Torah, he's hardly a symbol of great strength. Right? Seems to be the kid that allows himself to be sacrificed. And yet the oral tradition says that he was the epitome of power. The people would run away from him because his face was on fire. And yet that's not what he seems to be, because he was able, when necessary, to act out of character. What about Yaakov? Yaakov was the symbol of truth. What was in his heart was on his lips. What was on his lips was in his heart. He was completely straight. Okay? And yet look at his life. Constantly finding himself in situations where he has to make a difficult decision of whether he should lie, whether he should deceive. This is all soul training, and you get the same training. Because what Hashem gives each and every one of us is times in our life. It doesn't mean we have to become that. But if we can't act out of character sometimes, right? Then it means we become a victim of our personality rather than the master of our personality. And that's our challenge. So for the first part of this, what I want to share with you as we're going to work next part up to the eye, the first thing you need to know is you are a soul. You are never going to die. You are eternal. Everything about you, right, as a soul cannot be described. Souls do the describing. They cannot be described. You come in this world to play a part. Just like an actor is given a role, you as a soul have been given a role to play in this world. You've been given your talents. You've been given a very special Yetzirah, a very special evil inclination. Everybody has a very different evil inclination. You should never judge another person, right? Because you really can't understand how could they do such a thing, right? How could they be inclined to such horrible things? Everybody has a very different Yetzirah. Hashem has given you exactly what you need. Rav Kook explains on the bracha, there's a blessing that we say every morning, Asher Asali Kol Tzarchi, blessed be you, God, who made for me everything I need. Rav Kook says that includes all your vices, all your problems, are exactly what you need. Okay? So Hashem completely designs the persona, the character, the darkness and the light, the virtuous and the vice, the strengths and the weaknesses. And we're going to talk about that in the next piece of this evening, what that's all about. But in the meantime, that's your character. Okay? Now there's a lot you can do with it. Okay? It's like Hashem gave you 10 colors to draw with. Now there's a lot of things you could draw with 10 colors, but you're not going to get a different color. Okay? So don't try and be something you're not. But then again, you have to be sure that maybe what you are being is something you could redesign with the parts and assemble your parts differently. Okay? But you're not going to get new and different parts. And there's nothing wrong with any of your parts. What could be wrong is you've assembled the wood, wires, and nails into a weapon rather than an instrument, and you need perhaps to get some direction or guidance on how to reassemble all that. But that's your character. You come in this world to play that character. Your goal is, and to really be happy, is to maintain soulfulness. Which is you play your character, but you don't get lost in your character. You're able to be in your persona, but also you're able to see yourself, right? And that becomes the secret of change, and that becomes the secret of really guiding your life to where you want to get to. I remember when I was dating a woman many years ago. My wife didn't appreciate this, but now this is before I got married. And so this woman was taller than me. Now, most of the girls I dated was taller than me, because that's just for some reason the way the race goes. And but it didn't bother me. You know, I never even thought people were taller than me because I got used to looking that way. So I never think anyone was taller than me. But we were in a lobby and we were chatting, and then we got up and we started walking out of the hotel. And as we were walking out of the hotel, I looked across the room and I saw that this particular lobby had a lot of windows. So at night, windows become mirrors. And as we're walking, I looked and I saw, oh, look at what an odd-looking couple, right? He looked very short, she looked very tall. And so we're walking, and I just thought it was an odd-looking couple. Then we walked, and then I walked back and I said, wait, that was me and her, right? And then I said, she's not for me. Now, that doesn't mean that a short fellow can't marry a tall girl. That's not the point. It meant that I, as a short fellow, was not going to marry that particular tall girl. I was able to get outside the picture and look at it. What takes people so much time to change? Change is 1 second. That's not the problem. The problem is the realization that you have to change. And the realization you have to change is you have to be able to get out of character, get out of your situation, and be able to look at your situation, which is uniquely the power that souls can do. Okay? Souls can do. So this is the first step to self-mastery. You are a soul. You're not your character. This is the first step to really being happy, because happiness is being who you are and who you're meant to be. And this is the first step to really finding self-worth. Don't confuse who you are with what you play. But most people do confuse. You are a soul. You are invaluable. Nothing about your persona can in any way damage your soul. Haneshama shenatati bi tahora. The soul that you gave me is pure. Nothing you can do can damage the real you. There's lots you can do to conceal the real you, to pile dirt on the real you, but the real you can never ever be harmed. Right? The only question is, can you get to the real you? And that's what we'll talk about in the next session. Let's get some questions. Yeah.
Are souls different?
Okay. Souls are definitely different, but there's no way of describing the difference. That's what makes it complicated. Which is, they're not different like red is from blue. But the truth is, even red is from blue, you can't say anything about. What's the difference between red and blue? I don't know, they're just different. Right? What's the difference between chocolate and vanilla? I don't know, I just know there's a difference. Okay? Okay, so we'll talk about what higher lower means when we talk about the next step, which is I'm going to talk next. We're going to take a little break. We'll talk next about the connection between the soul and the I. Okay, so we'll talk about high or lower. But yes, I'm not you and you're not me, I think, right? Because that'll be interesting. But so obviously as souls, we're not the same. And yet, how do we describe the difference? We can't. It's not something that can be described in the terminology that we've been given to describe anything. So we can't. But definitely souls are different. There's a Jewish soul, there's a not Jewish soul. What's the difference? We'll maybe talk about it next when we talk about this, the meaning of the ultimate I, the connection with the I. Yes?
When you're talking about the soul, you never mentioned in my recollection that the soul is the connection with the Shem. So you can't really use your soul. Your soul is part of the Shem. Isn't that correct?
So that's what we'll talk about next.
The other thing, how much does your name, a name can be changed many times, change your character? It has great influence, and happens quite often.
Right. You don't have to change your character. What you have to change is the nature of your relationship to God. Okay? And we're going to talk about that. Okay? So we haven't talked about that at all, but that's what we're going to do after this break. Okay? Yeah.
The Yetzer Hara, you said, is in the me.
Yes.
And the Yetzer Tov is there also?
Yes.
And what's the ego?
The ego is real ego. Ego, if it's described as the sense of self-contained independence, that's the Yetzer Hara, right? If ego just means sense of self, it depends how you want to use the word ego. But when we talk about ego in a negative sense, right? Oh, he's so ego, she's so egotistical, then it means that they perceive themselves as self-contained, self-defined, and independent. And that's a lie. Nobody's self-contained, nobody's self-defined, nobody's independent. Then we'll talk about that next when we take a break. Yeah.
You were talking about change. You said that change happens quickly
if
you realize it.
Right. I said what?
My experience is when you realize that things to change, I think that change, I don't know, change is a process and takes a while.
You didn't realize it's strong enough. If you really, really, really realized it, and generally that's what takes time. What takes time is the realization that I must change. Not like I should change or it'd be a good idea to change, but like I absolutely must change. If a person can get to that place psychically, right, it's amazing what will change. But that takes time. That's what takes time. Okay, but the soul is so powerful, and the connection to Hashem is so powerful that it's amazing what we can make happen in our lives. But we have to really want it. Okay, and that could take a long time. It could take years before really a person gets to what they really, really, really want, and they say, "That's it. I must do this." All right. But that could take a long time for some people. Yeah.
Again, when you ask what is happiness, you said
the more you can
be who you are, the more happy you'll be.
Yes.
Are you talking about the soul? Like,
yes. The more you can operate as soul, the more happy you will be. But I haven't completely defined what it means to operate as soul. I've only given you half because we're still missing a very important part of this whole story. Okay? But the real goal in Judaism is simple, just to be who you are. Who are you? You are a soul that's come in this world to play a role, and we haven't completed that story yet, which we will. Yes?
It's very difficult to begin someone to know who they are in the soul in this world, because most people would try to eliminate that and bring it down. Just in my experience, it's very hard. You have to be very strong to get to that point and to hold on.
Well, so we'll talk about it next, because that's where the idea of Torah and mitzvah come in from a Jewish perspective, right? What can Torah and mitzvah do for us in our lives? Okay, we'll talk about that. Okay, in 20 minutes, we're going to continue. All right, and think of any questions you want to ask me.